You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We have a great book to share with you today. If you recall reading Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up just a few years ago, we have a sequel to that. We're going to talk with Pastor Richard in just a moment. Thanks to Concordia University, Wisconsin for supporting The Coffee Hour. Find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin at cuw.edu.
Live uncommon.
Joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Matthew Richard. He's pastor at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Minot, North Dakota, author of Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up? And now a sequel, Will the Real Church Please Stand Up? Seven False Churches. Pastor Richard, welcome back to the Coffee Hour.
It's good to be here.
I'm excited for this adventure that we get to go on in this book because there's a little bit of drama? Ooh. How would you, I don't know, a little fictitious, but based on a lot of truth.
Yeah. We should be careful. We don't describe it as a murder mystery or something like that, right?
Oh, dear. Right. That's a different podcast.
Yeah, different podcast, different book and all that. But Campbells, right? They meet the Campbells. And Campbells would be Ben and Jessica, and then their son Noah, and then Olivia, their daughter. They move to a town called Midway. And now these are very, very common names. And so I basically did some research. Okay, what's the most common name for a 40-year-old man? And Ben's a real common name. And then Jessica's a common name for a person in their 40s. And as far as, popular names for kids. And then what's the most popular name of a town in America right now? There's a ton of Midways out there. And so, again, trying to just paint with a broad brush so that people can relate to this family. And the Campbells, they move to Midway. And they're like, my goodness, we need to find a church. And so they go church shopping.
So what was your motivation for this book, having written Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up? What's the story for the background on this book?
Well, kind of kicking around an idea. I mean, Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up, it seemed to be received very well. And the format of the book was, I wouldn't say it's entirely unique, but yet it's kind of unique that we had some narratives, some stories that were teaching. And then you would have kind of this idea that you're a fly on the wall, where you would pause and then kind of look at the conversation, what's going on. Then we have these text boxes in the book where it would explain some of the concepts in more detail. So you can read that book at a very, a very surface level, just kind of read for the narrative and kind of glean on it. Then if you want to peel back a layer, people have said, with these books, you can peel back a layer and look a little more in depth of the conversation, what's going on. And if you want to peel back another layer, you can actually get some of the theology in the text boxes to explain these huge Tectonic plates of ideology and theology that are at work in these stories. And so you can take a real simple story and, again, peel back multiple layers to learn from it. And so with the Real Church Please Stand Up, we kind of took that same format, but instead of having, seven false churches and having seven separate stories, decided to have one family throughout the whole seven chapters. So this family, the Campbells, they go and they visit seven different churches and come to find out these seven churches are what we would call false churches. And so it's very important for the reader to understand that when you visit these churches with the Campbells, you're kind of like a fly on the wall. You're going along with them as they journey into this church. So you get to experience as the reader, the architecture of the church, the sight, the smells, the conversations, the nuances, everything down to the seating, where they sit and what they observe in the sanctuary, the size of the buildings. All these little small details are communicating something about the church, the theology at work of the church, the unity of the church, the purpose of the church. And so the Campbells, again, are pulling all these senses in. Now, so again, if you read it from a very, let's say, surface level, you say, oh, okay, this is what's going on. But as you peel back those layers, you're like, man, the architecture is actually communicating something about the church. And all the different conversations communicate something about the church. And so again, you can peel those layers back and find more detail within that.
That's really interesting. And I want to talk more about that in just a minute. How was your congregation part of writing this book? Were they a part of writing this book?
Yeah. My wife made me promise, I shared this with other interviews. My wife made me promise no more books. And I said, sure. And so I was visiting with Concordia Publishing House, some editors and so forth, and kind of kicking some ideas around. We kind of came up with this idea. And our goal, our goal was maybe do a sequel, Will the Real Church Please Stand Up? But we didn't want it to be, seven chapters of bashing churches. Mm-hmm. So our goal was to focus on each of these churches and stress what they're doing well. So with all these seven churches, with the exception, I think, of one, they're framed in a very positive context. They're doing a lot of things very, very well, but they're missing something. And that which they're missing is what makes them a false church, that they're missing, ultimately, obviously, the gospel, Jesus Christ, at the center of the church. So With that stated, though, what I wanted to do was, as far as writing it, I've learned over the years that the more critique you can get as an author, the better the book will be. And it hurts at first when you get critique, but then you realize, no, this is helpful. So I enlisted the help of a group of about a dozen people from St. Paul's, and we formatted a Facebook private group, and we had the manuscript, and I tossed it out to them, and they would give feedback and insights and so forth. And I just remember one lady, a wonderful saint of the church, describing one church. She goes, you know, I think this church needs a bowling alley in it. I'm like, yeah, I think we'll put that in there. So we inserted a bowling alley because she thought, you know, there's a new room. They were developing a youth room. She goes, they need a bowling alley. So I inserted that in. And we had all the different feedback from the parishioners here at the church. So we had a fun time on it. And so they helped give some flavor to the book, if you will. And as we went through each chapter. So yeah, so we got the Campbells. They go to seven churches. And the very last church they go to, the eighth church, is actually the real church. And they find their church home at the very end.
I've been in a church with a bowling alley before. They were actually common back in the 70s, I think, 60s and 70s in some churches in like the central Midwest.
Why does that not surprise me?
I've never seen a church with a bowling alley, but I've been to a church with a rock climbing wall. And I so badly wanted to climb it. I was there as a guest. I'm like, it'd be fun to climb that. I'd probably fall and get hurt, you know.
All right, so the subtitle of your book is Seven False Churches. How do you define a false church?
Well, okay, there again, like we talked about, each of these false churches, we talk about them in the book. The Campbells experience, like for instance, one of the churches, they have absolutely great customer service, if we'll use that terminology. And so the coffee was great. The marketing was phenomenal. The music was perfect. The pastor was articulate. The seats were added. I mean, their app was phenomenal. They had so many good things. And then they come to other churches, such as like a church called Mercy Hill. They have a great venture as far as helping out with those who are in need in their community, as far as packing backpacks and the soup kitchen and doing things just absolutely phenomenal for Mercy Care. And so it's kind of this term that I've heard over the years called mission drift. It's where you lose the main mission of the entity. And so you can have this in business, right? You can have a business that's intended on doing, you know, maybe selling hamburgers and french fries, and they do that really, really well. But then what happens, they kind of get tied up and maybe selling something else. And then they lose their main focus and they lose their niche. Okay, that's a marketing term. They lose their niche, what they really were good at. And then as a result of losing what they're really good at, they drift into a different mission. And as a result, then they fall apart. It's the same thing that goes with the church. The church has a niche. It has a purpose and a unity that's at the hub and the center of the church. But what can happen is, well, we Christians, we can kind of, you know, get distracted. We can get, you know, infatuated with the bright lights off to the side or whatever endeavor it might be. And we can ever so slightly start drifting off to the side. And we can do a ton of things right. But if we're not focused on the main thing of the church, well, then unfortunately, we become a false church. Because if we're not promoting Christ and his gifts, if we're promoting something else other than Christ, well, I hate to say it this way, but that's Christless. And a Christless church is not a Christian church. And a Christian church without Jesus is, well, it's a false church.
So what do we in our human nature tend to gather around instead of Christ?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, very, very simplistically, you know, in all of our aspects of life, we gather around things. I mean, maybe the most common would be way to think about this is when we get together and hang out with somebody at a house, you will sit around a fire. Right. The other day, we had a bunch of youth over at our house and some of my kids' friends, and we had a big bonfire outside and everyone's sitting around that fire. When you're at your homes, and, you know, you're sitting on the couches, you gather around a TV, right? When you go to a sporting event, you're gathering around a football, right, at the center. And when the football goes this way, everybody looks that way. And when the football goes that way, I mean, very simplistically, we gather around things. But what can happen is, you know, that old hymn that I reference quite a bit, it's that line in that old hymn that says, we're prone to wander, we're prone to leave the God that we love. Or I would actually say the God that loves us. And so we're like a sheep that wanders away from the sheep pen. And so the sheep are to be what? Gathered around that shepherd that protects and keeps them, leads them to good pasture land, protects them from the wolves themselves. But then, as you know, strange sheep, we will see greener grass, so-called, on the other side, and we stray, we wander. We're like that lost coin. We go lost in the cracks. We're like the prodigal son. We say, give us the money, give us the bling, and then we want to go off and do our own thing. And so this is part of our sinful nature. And our sinful nature wanders. It likes to leave. It likes to be independent. It likes to forge its own path. And we do that as Christians. We tend to wander and tend to leave the God that loves us. And that's what gets us in trouble.
I want to go back to this concept of mission drift a little bit and how it can be, I don't know, maybe I'm curious at your perspective on if it's kind of a slippery slope or maybe a fine line, how we can get, get to mission drift, thinking of where this might occur in churches and including some of the churches that, and to be clear, these churches that the Campbells visit are not necessarily actual churches with these names, but made up names.
Right,
correct?
Right, correct. Yeah. Yeah. So these, yeah. So it's not like I went through Minot and walked in and just interviewed all these pastors and got their names and numbers. No. So I chose seven different churches that are caricatures of different churches that I've actually served and been a part of and also know of. And then as far as the names go, I tried to pick very generic names. And so as you look through these churches, it's Trinity Church, it's Mercy Hill Church. There's a church called The Quest. There's another church called Cornerstone Church. These are very generic names you could find in any city.
So let's talk a little bit about the concept of mission drift, how easy and seemingly innocent it is to have that mission drift. What would be an example? You use the burger joint, but in a church, what would be an example of mission drift that takes us off of the focus on Christ and his gifts for us in word and sacrament to something else that a church might become all about?
Yeah. Okay. So give me an example. Okay. Probably and this is a very compassionate way to look at this. There's a chapter in the book talks about Mercy Hill Church. And Mercy Hill Church is located in downtown Midway, and they're surrounded by an area of downtown Midway where you have a lot of broken families, a lot of families that are definitely struggling. Now, what can happen is we as Christians, we can look at that and we have compassion on broken families. And I would say, God be praised. Thank goodness that we do have compassion for families that are broken. And so the Mercy Hill Church then decides, okay, we're going to do a food pantry. We're going to do a soup kitchen. We're going to pack backpacks. And they're trying to fulfill the needs of the broken estate of the family. And we'd say, man, that's great. But in doing that, okay, when doing something very, very good, what we can do is then we can fail to keep our main post. We can fail our main goal as the church. And so we always must remember that the main goal of the church is to what? Proclaim the word and to minister the sacrament, to deliver Jesus, to proclaim Jesus. I mean, if you think about this world that we live in, you can go almost anywhere and you get all these different things that are going on. But where's that one place where you hear about Christ and his gifts? It's the church. It has to be the church. Nobody else is saying it. And so you have a church called Mercy Hill Church, and they have there's implications that the gospel is present, but what's ended up happening is they have focused so much on the family, the soup kitchen and the packing the backpacks, that has become such a prevalent part of their ethos as their church, that the flavor of the church, the goal of the church, that the gospel has become secondary. And again, so they're distracted by something that is really, really good, which is helping those who are in need. But then when you actually do that, you can actually fail to uphold what first importance, what Apostle Paul talks about. The Apostle Paul talks about the first premise, the first importance, which is Christ and him crucified for the forgiveness of sins. And so it is, again, it's very, very easy to be distracted by very good things. And then there's other churches. There's a church that gets involved with helping out with politics, trying to advance good politics in the realm of the state. And there again, they get pulled away from their main calling as the church, and they get drifting into the realm of becoming a political action group. And for all intents and purposes, what they're doing in the political realm is good, just like Mercy Hill, what they're doing is good. But then they forget what their main calling, which is the gospel, which is Christ and the cross and the empty tomb and the forgiveness of sins.
We're talking with Reverend Dr. Matthew Richard, author of Will the Real Church Please Stand Up? Seven False Churches from Concordia Publishing House. We'll learn more about the book and continue our conversation with Pastor Richard in just a moment right here on The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
At Concordia University, Wisconsin, we believe you were created for a reason, to use your God-given gifts to help others, to live a life of self-sacrifice in a me-first world, to live a life that's uncommon. Whether you're taking one of 50 plus online programs or learning with us in person on the shores of Lake Michigan, you'll be equipped to make an uncommon impact. Learn more at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Live uncommon.
Welcome back to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Our guest today, the Reverend Dr. Matthew Richard, author of Will the Real Church Please Stand Up? Seven False Churches from Concordia Publishing House, available this week. And talking about false churches, this is, I think, so interesting to me because it's so easy to, as we were just talking about that mission drift, it's so easy to find our focus on things that are adjacent to the gospel. Is that a fair term to use?
Yeah, I think it'd be, that's actually a very well way of saying it. It's something that's adjacent or something that's alongside or a pressing need in the church.
They're adjacent to the gospel. And sometimes it's easy to even relabel them, like to call them the gospel too, when they're really not. It's mercy work. It's compassion. It's living out the what God has given us to do. And in terms of caring for our neighbor, a lot of those things are certainly important, but they in themselves are not the gospel. And so now we're exploring what these churches are that are some of the false churches. And again, these are fictitious churches that are caricatures of the false churches that we're talking about. So when was talking about these false churches, many have large followings. Why is this the case that so many of these false churches have large followings?
Well, again, what we have to look at a church or any organization, you have to look at what is at the center. What is the unity of that church? And so, in a lot of ways, you can do this with using sociology and marketing and so forth in any segment. I mean, you could open up a church and you come into a community and you find, okay, what are the people like in this community? And then what is it that they desire? What is it that they want? You can actually do a quick polling on that. And then you create a church, or you don't necessarily have to do a church. You could just do an entity of some sort and to provide a place of unity for people who are desiring unity in a particular thing or a particular hobby, per se. And then you have to provide a direction for that. And so it is, in my humble opinion, it'd be very, very easy to take a church and move into a community and pack it. You could pack it pretty quickly, but you would have to then, instead of the unity being at the center, being Christ and his gifts, a bloody cross and an empty tomb, you'd have to replace it with some sort of other unity that people are longing for. And then you would have to provide some sort of purpose so that they feel like their time invested in that unification is actually worthwhile, that they're moving to some destination, some goal, some accomplishment. And so, again, when it comes to the church, two very simple questions that are at the heart of this book is, number one, what is the unity of the church? And number two, what is the purpose? And so those two questions can be fleshed out with some fancy language, some Greek language. The word unity comes in the Bible from this idea of koinonia. That's the Greek word koinonia. And proper koinonia, as we see in the Bible, is what we're unifying around. There has to be a thing at the center. If you think of a wheel, you know, there has to be all these spokes. There has to be a hub at the center. And when koinonia is talked about in 1 Corinthians and elsewhere in the Bible, the very hub, the center of that wheel is always Christ. And so it definitely has to be Christ for the church. And then we talk about the purpose of the church. And I like this kind of fancy philosophical term called telos, right? Which is the end purpose and the goal. So what is the purpose of the church? Where are we going? And I tell the saints here at St. Paul's that where we're going is we're ultimately going unto death. And my job as a pastor, prepare them for the grave, prepare them for death, prepare them to be what? United with Christ in paradise to await the resurrection of the dead. And so that's my goal as a pastor, is that they may abide in the unification of who Christ is for them and to help them abide and remain in the holy ark of the Christian church unto their death and the resurrection. Then that's the telos, that's the end. But that message itself is going to sometimes what fall on deaf ears, unfortunately, in our American culture. And that's the truth of it. You know, when you present a salvation through a bloody Christ on a cross in an empty tomb, and that your goal is to remain and abide unto death, that doesn't necessarily come across as the most exciting thing in our culture these days. But nonetheless, it's true, and it's what's needed.
So as we're evaluating the churches in our community, or if we move to a new place and are looking to join a new church, what are some of the questions we should ask as we're evaluating different churches?
Yeah, very good question, Sarah. It just goes back to those two questions of unity and purpose. And, you know, sometimes when it comes to questions, I think the simpler the question that we can ask in situations, whether it's this topic or another topic, if we ask very, very elementary, simple questions, it's going to challenge us to have very blunt and open, honest answers. And so when you come into a church, visiting a church, asking yourself, what are the members of this church, what they're unifying around? What is it? What are they gathering? What does the architecture speak to? You know, what is the architecture? So I give this example all the time, and I feel really privileged to serve here at St. Paul's Lutheran Church. When you come into the sanctuary here at St. Paul's, and when I introduce people to the church, or maybe somebody's interested in the church, I always bring them in the sanctuary, and right away they kind of look left and right for a few seconds, and then they pause and they look up because it's a big high ceiling, and then their eyes go up towards the ceiling and then go straight to the back of the altar, and they see what a big stained glass window with Jesus portrayed as crucified. And so there's no doubt about it, your eyes have to go to that cross, and it shows that we're unified around Christ and his gifts. And so I would say when we visit a church, the architecture speaks to us, the conversations speak to us, the budget of the church, where the church spends its money, speaks to us, what the pastor's speaking about and teaching about from the pulpit and in conversations, all of that's going to speak to us as what the unity of the church is. And then not after establishing that unity, then where is the church going? Where is its end? What is its objective per se? And that's going to be fleshed out as well in the conversations and the budget, where the energy is put, where the emphasis is put. Even in one of the churches, real briefly, one of the churches they visit, the Campbells, they notice that the fellowship hall per se, the gymnasium, is absolutely meticulous and brand new. And they come into the sanctuary and it's what, worn down and not taken care of. And so they can definitely see that the sanctuary, that's it's not as important as these other parts of the building, because these other parts are what, clean, meticulous, and new, whereas the sanctuary is kind of run down. That says something too as well.
Yeah. Oh man. There's so much more I want to talk about in this book. And we're almost out of time. We'll try to get in two more questions. You talk about the relationship between doctrine and practice. What we believe and teach, and the relationship of that to our practice, and how those two are related, how they influence or how they can shape one another. Give us your 30-second speech on that.
I would say real quickly, what we do and how we practice our piety, there's a reason behind it. And I would even argue that you know, this idea that I'm going to be impartial, that practice is neutral. No, it's not. I mean, sometimes practice is neutral because we don't think about it. We just do it. But if we're going to do our practice, it should be informed by what we understand with Christ and who he is and what the kingdom of God is and what all of our theology communicates. And so I would wholeheartedly argue with anyone that, in a nice way, obviously, argue in a nice way, that what we believe and what we teach and what we confess does influence our practice, and they're linked together. And so if we're not aware of our theology, sometimes we can have a bad practice, and that can loop around and bleed back into infecting our theology without even knowing it. And so as you'll see in this book, it's very, very, very evident by the time you're done reading this book that if you look at the architecture of the churches, the way that the people function in each of these churches, where they invest their money, what the pastor talks about, the conversations, all of those things, all those flavors, if you will, seven very different churches, but beneath all of those seven different churches are what, seven different theologies, different unities, different purposes that are embedded underneath. And that's kind of the exciting part of following the Campbells. You get to kind of peel those layers back and see what's underneath each of these churches.
So how do we steer our friends toward a more Christ-centered church if we've noticed some of these marks of the false churches, of some of this mission drift? How do we steer our friends to a Christ-centered church?
I had this conversation with a parishioner here at St. Paul's, and they're like, well, how do I handle this, Pastor? And I said, well, let our unity and our telos be known. In other words, when you visit with your friends, talk to them. You talk to them about your church, that we come together in the name of Jesus. And we get to go to church on Sundays and get to what? Hear the word of God. We get to go to church and hear about the forgiveness of sins. We go as poor, miserable sinners each and every week. And the Lord God, he doesn't disappoint. He gives us his good gifts. And then we can talk about how the church is like this holy ark, which we confess in our baptismal liturgy, that we're safe in the ark of the church, and that we get to abide with other believers with all of our failings and all of our struggles and all of our difficulties in life, we gather together in this holy ark of the church to receive good gifts. And that gives us such confidence and comfort and assurance. And so we can confess that. And we can do that without being pushy or being like a, no offense to used car salesmen, but we don't have to be a used car salesman being pushy. And we just confess and we share the joy that we have in Christ and his gifts that we gather week by week. And Lord willing, that will be salt to bring about that saltiness and making somebody say, man, I want to check that out. I've heard it said before, real briefly, I've heard it said before that evangelism is nothing more than one beggar telling the other beggar where the free warm bread is. And I just love that. That we just go, hey, I'm a beggar, you're a beggar, come and receive free warm bread that's for you, that's for me at this place. And it never runs out. And I think that's just awesome to think of it that way.
Will the Real Church Please Stand Up? Seven False Churches from the Reverend Dr. Matthew Richard at Concordia Publishing House. You can find it at cph.org. Pastor Richard, thank you so much for spending this time with us on the Coffee Hour this morning. Great book. I've enjoyed reading it and looking forward to sharing it with some friends.
Absolutely. Thank you, too. Yep. It's a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support the Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.